This is the forgetting.
Like a lot of people, God gave me a good brain. And I'm not stupid just because I have this disease. So I have to fight to find the switches, to turn the switches back on that go off in this disease. You know, if we're going to fight this war, it can't be all gloom and doom. You have to see the smile and move forward. The unfortunate stereotype is what people think the disease is, and they got it all wrong. But there's so many damn layers to this. It affects people so differently. And you're right. Whether it's the devil or Stephen King, no one could come up with a plot that's more horrifying than this.
From WCAI in Woods Hole, Massachusetts, and from the tip-top floor of my brownstone in Brooklyn, New York, this is The Forgetting, a podcast about dementia. I'm David Shank, author of the book The Forgetting, and senior advisor to an international research consortium called Cure Alzheimer's Fund, which helps make this podcast possible. And with me, as always, I couldn't do it without him. This literally could not happen without Greg, is my friend and co-host Greg O'Brien, author of On Pluto, Inside the Mind of Alzheimer's. His book has that subtitle because Greg has early onset Alzheimer's, and he is committed to reporting his experience for as long as he possibly can. That's why this podcast exists. Hi, Greg.
How you doing, David? How's it going?
I'm okay. I
what's the view from the top of the brownstone in Brooklyn?
From the corner of the room I'm perched at, it's not much of a view, but I am looking at a nice old piece of glass. It's probably it may actually be the only original piece of glass in the brownstone, which makes it probably 140 years old or something like that. So that's kind of cool. It's got that wavy glass.
Kind of close to your age, maybe, huh?
I can't tell you how excited I was when I learned in science class, probably in eighth grade, that glass is a liquid. It just moves really, really slowly. You know, it's got the gravitational pull. Very, very slowly pulls it down and in other directions, and that's why old glass has that terrific uneven look. I to me, that's still one of the most exciting ideas there is.
Sounds like you've just explained advanced dementia.
Is that how it feels like sometimes?
It can. Let me tell you about, you didn't ask questions, that's right, because you're the boss here, but can I answer a question without you asking one?
Absolutely.
All right, because you asked me on my text, my son Connor drives, so he drove me to the studio here. And I text you, and I'm looking at it right now. I said, 10 minutes away, and I was on the way just feeling kind of in and out and funny. And all of a sudden, which is happening more and more now, my brain said, type in zoo. So I typed in zoo, and right away, you type back pizza. I'm looking at this right now, and then you say, we're playing word association, right? And I text back, said, not sure, getting it together, a few brain lapses happened. So it was kind of expect more like that. Sometimes it's not predictable.
That's, you know, I'm really glad you explained that, because I thought that you had typed in the word zoo by accident. You know, it was like one of those word correct things where you type in the word like see you soon and the iPhone changes it to zoo. But you said you actually had some sort of impulse to write that word for some reason.
Yeah, maybe it was the state of how I felt my mind was. And that's what happens now. The mind is just telling me to do stuff. And which can be dangerous for a lot of people in this disease. When the loss of filter, you start saying shit that you shouldn't be saying. And now I'm typing stuff, and you know, I worry about, okay, I have people checking my emails now, and you know, just to make sure that I don't do something that's too drastic.
Mm. I wanted to take a minute to talk about, I've said now, this is our ninth broadcast, and so we're starting to get into the swing of things here, but I've been wanting to explain, I don't think, and maybe Sean will correct me after this has been recorded, and we'll just cut this part out, but I don't think we have yet taken a moment or two to explicitly talk about the goal, the long-term goal of the podcast, at least from my perspective, and kind of the big idea, which I sort of hint at it in the introduction each time, but you and I really are committed to talking to one another every, you know, couple weeks. It will probably be, we hope it will be, until you can't talk about this, you know, what you're going through anymore. And I don't know, and you don't know what that's going to be like and feel like and how long that's going to be. And of course, that's a horrifying idea, but that's the commitment that we've both made. And I think it's, there's something really, while I don't want to minimize the horror of it and the tragedy of it, that there's something really exciting about it. It's almost like an adventure that we're both going to be, you know, trying to talk through this, even when it becomes really hard, like physically hard to communicate about it. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, and it is. Sean knows, our fine producer, he's here. He could probably tell there are times, because he's looking at me when I'm on and I'm not on. So it's, even doing this is difficult for me. And, you know, I'll have notes and things that I refer to. I know you told me not to open my laptop, but when I was in grammar school, the nuns told me to do a lot of things I didn't do either. So, but, I need some helps, but what I appreciate what you're doing and what the podcast is doing and GBH in Boston, they're allowing the word of this to get out and the conversation, because, and we may have said this before, and you got good editors if I repeat myself, which I'm sure I do every time we talk, but nobody, I get the sense in general, not specifically, but in general, nobody wants to talk about Alzheimer's until they go to your wake. And then they say, boy, that really sucks. We got to do something about it. And the time to do something about it is 30, 40 years before the wake, because that's when the symptoms can start. And so I'm honored to be part of this. You have my commitment. I'm going to have good days, bad days. I'll have times when I say things I probably shouldn't, but you're smart enough to edit them out. And I'll drop a few F-bombs along the way.
Yeah, and I want, and I think you want actually people to hear you say some of the things that you probably shouldn't, because the point of this is not to come up with something clean and pristine and crisp and neat. It's to give people as much of an insight into the blunt truth of all this as possible.
It's I had a very interesting discussion yesterday with the wife of my buddy Bob, who died recently of Alzheimer's and cancer. And can I take a sip here? This is good gin. that's a joke. It's really scotch. Okay, see, I'm being the wise guy now, and I just lost my fucking place. All right, what was I saying?
You were talking about Bob, but I just want to say that you just not only made a joke, but then you made a joke about the joke, which
makes me funnier than you.
Well, yes, of course, but also because everyone listening already, you know, knows that I have a terrible sense of humor, even though I try all the time. But what it tells us about your brain is that it's still actually, Greg, highly, highly functioning, because we've already talked about this a little bit, but that's the really the best insight you could have into the kind of meta skills of your brain and the meta functioning. It really, even though I know you feel sometimes and often very frustrated by it, the fact that you kind of went into that abstraction and then the abstraction on top of the abstraction, that's very, very rich, neurologically speaking.
I mean,
but back to your story about Bob. Sorry.
Remind me of where we started, but I think it's a good point. Like a lot of people, God gave me a good brain, and I'm not stupid just because I have this disease. So I have to fight to find the switches, to turn the switches back on that go off in this disease. And it's called finding new pathways. And I think we've talked about that, where you get so pissed off when something shuts down. And there's an awful lot they don't know about the brain, but a lot of researchers now and scientists and doctors are saying, you can, if you work hard at it, you could try to find new pathways when something shuts down to complete a thought. And I've been reading more and more about it. So, all right, what were we talking about?
I interrupted you. You're starting to tell the story about your friend Bob, who we talked about a little bit last week.
My buddy Bob died. We talked about it in the previous podcast. Right. My buddy Bob died about a week ago, and I had coffee with his wife. I won't call her a widow because I have a hard time with that word. We had coffee on Cape Cod, overlooking a marsh near Cape Cod Bay. It was a Dunkin' Donuts, my favorite, so there I just gave someone a free plug. But and Bob was afraid of dying. And the first time I met with him, I sensed that and started talking to him, started talking more and more to try to get him comfortable with it. Because I hate to break this to you, David, we're all going to die. But and over time, he did. He had a hard time in life and a hard time dealing with his disease. And he became more at peace. And in the end, he made the decision not to treat his cancer. And I think, you know, I have cancer too that I'm not treating. And just take the path of least resistance that he felt led to a more peaceful place. And she looked at me, and it stunned me what she said. She goes, "I got an idea why you're here now." And I said, "What?" She goes, "Your job now is to lead people out."
Mm.
And I said, "Wow."
Like Moses.
Well, I don't know about that, but your job is to lead people out. In other words, make them comfortable. And I was blown away by what she said.
Mm. That's really beautiful. Mm.
That's all I got.
All right. Well, there's something else I wanted to talk about today, and that is, unfortunately, another huge, huge loss that we experienced in the world of Alzheimer's this week, and another very personal loss for you, and that is Trish Vredenburg, who was the co-founder of Us Against Alzheimer's. And I know that I knew her a little bit and appeared on a panel with you and Trish, but I didn't know her as well as you did. So I'll fill in some of the factual gaps, but if you want to jump in and tell us about Trish and how you knew her.
Well, might be good for you to give kind of the overview.
Sure.
Of her from what you know.
So Trish was married to George Vredenburg, and the two of them formed a really unspeakably important organization called Us Against Alzheimer's. I can't tell you what year it was, but it was a number of years ago. They were inspired to form this organization to advocate for increased funding for research into the disease after the loss of Trish's mother, and they were blessed with some resources, I think, you know, some personal resources to get it going. But more than that, they both have given so much to the necessary just political and civic organization of around fighting this disease. It's really the closest thing to ACT UP, I think, that we have in the Alzheimer's world. And for years and years, they've been raising the alarm bells and helping people learn more about the disease and putting pressure on senators and congressmen and women to put their money with where their loud mouths are and put more funding in this disease. And they really have noticeably moved the needle. They were really instrumental in helping to increase Alzheimer's from 550 million or so, which it kind of sat at for years and years, up to the 950 million mark. And we don't know what's going to happen as we're speaking now with the crazy budget world in Washington. But really, in the last year or two, there has been a seismic increase in Alzheimer's funding. It's still not nearly enough, but we have to attribute that in large part to the efforts of George and Trish. And you can talk about her personally, but Trish was a writer, a fellow writer. She wrote for several TV shows, and she wrote a novel, and she wrote a play about her mother. And I know that all the people who came into contact with her were moved by her humanity, loved to spend time with her, also just found her very formidable. And it's, as I said, it's a great loss in the Alzheimer's community.
Well, thank you. I mean, Trish is a very close friend, and George. I do a lot of advocacy work for Us Against Alzheimer's, and I've been on Capitol Hill with them. I was honored last fall to be awarded the first... her mother's name was B. Lerner, who died of Alzheimer's, and in the Ronald Reagan Building for 500 people, Us Against Alzheimer's dinner with Laura Bush on hand and Nancy Pelosi, I was awarded the first annual B. Lerner Courage in Alzheimer's Award. And I'm indebted to the family. And you know, while you were talking, because I'm writing about Trish in my revised edition, and came across something that she said about her mother. And she said, quote, which I think applies to Trish, and I'm reading this from my laptop, which you told me not to open, but you can't see. That was another joke, not as funny. But so here's a quote. My mother was larger than life. She embraced life with style, grace, and passion. She was a fashion plate. She wore drop-dead hats with signature pearls and had the glide of a woman who had won every dance contest. She would capture a room just by entering it. And you know what? Like mother, like daughter. And she had incredible courage, incredible drive. David, she feared, because we talked about it a lot, Alzheimer's herself, passed down perhaps from her mom. And was taken up by a heart attack. George is one of the most incredible men I've ever met in my life, former executive with CBS News and Time Warner. And the two of them have gone around the world. They invited me to speak last fall again in Switzerland at a World Health Conference that they were hosting. And this couple have done as much or more for the cause of Alzheimer's in terms of not only raising awareness but raising needed funds than anyone that I know. And I think as a tribute to Trish, and also as another call to arms, we need to embrace the fine work of Us Against Alzheimer's and the work on Capitol Hill. And we're facing potential cutbacks, budget cutbacks. You're, David, more attuned to that than me, and maybe you could talk about it. But I think you honor the legacy of someone like Trish by honoring the organization that was a reflection of her. I love Trish. She's just an extraordinary woman, and I was stunned when I got the word. She, by the way, according to my notes here, she was a scriptwriter for Designing Woman, Kate and Allie, Family Ties. She's been around.
Yeah, she was quite accomplished, and as was George in his previous career. And my understanding is that they both became more or less full time with the cause of Alzheimer's, just kind of leaving most of their other passions behind to really put everything they have into this one. And as I said, it made a big difference. This is a really hard disease to fight for. It just has so many things going against it. It's not a disease that strikes young people. It's not a disease that we have some nice medicines for that all we need to do is just, you know, get the medicines in the hands of the right people. It's a disease that confuses people when they see it. It's not a disease that is intuitive when you experience it as a caregiver or friend. It's not like cancer where you can just immediately understand, oh, it's this part of your body that has a tumor in it and is growing too rapidly and needs to be excised. It's like it creates, someone told me, I think when I was writing my book, that if the devil was creating the perfect disease, this would be it, because it's hard to pin down. It's hard to talk about. It's existential.
There's so many layers, as someone said to it, and it's not, there's no stereotype for it. The unfortunate stereotype is what people think the disease is, and they got it all wrong. But there's so many damn layers to this. It affects people so differently. And you're right. Whether it's the devil or Stephen King, no one could come up with a plot that's more horrifying than this. And that's to take nothing away from cancer.
Of course.
And as I said, I told you I have cancer, and you know, autism, AIDS, heart disease, breast cancer. I don't want a single cent, and I will fight like hell, single cent less to be appropriated for that. I will walk in any march for any of those diseases. But the difference with Alzheimer's and talking to people is this is a category in and of itself that is going to take out this generation. And, you know, it's great about the optimism and cure, but those of us with Alzheimer's feel that the good work that's going on will maybe stave off the onset of symptoms, but those of us on the train, we're heading for the cliff, and there's an awful lot of us on the train.
Mm. Well, let's...
there's a sense of humor to everything, so in honor of Trish and George, I have a whole thing on my laptop of notes because I'm working on something about Trish in the book. So Trish and I used to email back and forth, and we copied George. And because she was a writer and I'm a writer, and we had that writer's attraction, so she would flirt with me on an email copying George just to piss him off. So I'll read an email from her, January 5th, 2017, and George's response is priceless. And you know, if we're going to fight this war, it can't be all gloom and doom. You have to see the smile and move forward. So that's why I share this. Greg, she writes, January 5th, 2017, it's so hard not to fall in love with you again every time I read your musings. Please don't tell George, he's insanely jealous. George, no sweat, we have bigger issues, a split country, and thus collectively we hold our breath. So, you know, we had that kind of relationship, and it was rich.
Yeah, that's nice. Well, let's end on that note and, of course, dedicate this episode to Trish and to her cause. And as you and I have already talked about, we're going to get George on this program to talk with him. Now, of course, it may be a while before we get him because we don't want to pull him out of his mourning, but sooner or later we will sit down and talk with him directly about all the things that he and Trish have done for us.
I will see George at a memorial service in Washington I've been asked to go to, so I will express that to him.
Absolutely. Thank you. Greg, it was great to talk to you, and let me give credit to a few other important people here. That's it for our show today. Greg and I would like to thank you for listening. At WCAI in Woods Hole, the engineer is the great Dan Tridle. The Forgetting is a production of WCAI. Our producer is Sean Corcoran. Our theme music was composed and produced by Dr. Rudy Tanzi, who is also the chair of the Research Consortium at Cure Alzheimer's Fund. Thank you, Rudy, as always. And Greg, please don't forget, you still owe me that $100.
I'm going to fax it to you, brother.
I'm waiting for it.
Is it a color fax or can it be black and white?
You let me worry about that part.
Okay. Love you.
Be well.